This is continuing coverage.
The Black Swan murder trial of Ashley Benefield from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Now back to the courtroom.
It's a proper argument.
What else did Michael Haig tell you that was significant? He told you that they were moving. He said both Douglas Benefield and Ashley Benefield was moving. And he even showed you how it went from right to left in that three-dimensional diagram with the first shot out the door, the second shot in the wall, or one shot out the door, one shot in the wall, one in the chest and one in the leg. He showed you the two different cones. That would be consistent with what Ashley told you about trying to get more distance to move away from him. There was only one way to go in that room. She was already back to the back of the room, so the only way she could go was sideways to her left. Finally, he also told you that Ashley's explanation was absolutely consistent with the physical evidence. Then we had Dr. Lou, Emma Lou, former medical examiner for Miami-Dade County, who has always testified for the state, except here she came in and testified for the defense. Why do you think that is? Dr. Lou told you that the abrasion to the arm, she believed, was from front to back, and she believed it was the shot that went out the door and down the hall. And the bullet would not have mushroomed or expanded, as you heard Michael Haig explain, that bullets are designed to be able to expand. Because the wound was so superficial, there would not have been enough tissue in the hollow point of the bullet to expand it. She also told you it would be consistent with Doug lunging at Ashley Benefield. And she showed you with rods how the abrasion to the arm would take place, as well as the shot to the chest. Now here's something interesting that maybe everybody's forgotten, Miss O'Donnell did not address. Who was it that told us that Doug was skilled in martial arts and trained to take the weapon away? Why, that was his daughter, Eva. So here's Doug, who gets into his fighting martial arts position and lunges at her to grab the weapon, and Dr. Lou explains the abrasion shot. All four of these shots had no pattern at all. These are four random shots, no association whatsoever, indicative of somebody who's in an absolute panic firing a gun. What's more, as not only Mr. Sant told you, Mr. Haig told you, and as the state's own witness told you, if you don't hold the weapon properly and give it the pressure that it needs, it will result in a jam from one of the cartridges. Just like what happened here. So I want you to please consider something. Before evaluating the defense case, you have to first determine whether or not the state failed to prove that the shooting was unjustified. That's your first order of business. Because if the state failed to prove their allegations beyond a reasonable doubt, it's over. You don't need to evaluate the case that the defense presented. We weren't obligated to present anything, but we did. And I think we can agree that if the state's case does not meet that threshold of beyond and to the exclusion of every reasonable doubt, your verdict must be not guilty. Ashley Benefield got on the stand and endured over 2 hours of cross-examination. It was our perception that the state never landed a blow in over 2 hours. That's 2 hours in addition to the hour and a half that I had her up there on direct examination. In the world in which we live, it sounds strange to try to reduce an event like this to an explanation within an hour and a half, but this is the only form that we have to resolve things like that. So we did it, and Ashley got up there and she explained to you exactly what happened, and she did it well, and the state never touched her. Look at the crime scene photos that were taken, not at some modeling presentation, not at some outing. Look at the crime scene photos that were taken by Ms. Dorvac. They're in evidence, and you see if you don't see swelling and redness on those photographs. So it's September 27th, 2020, the day of the homicide. Doug arrives at Ashley's house late that afternoon, and he's already simmering. He's on a slow boil, ladies and gentlemen. Why? Because he knows she's leaving. She's leaving. He's not going with her. He's going to live somewhere else. He knows that. This was his last hope for any kind of reconciliation. And Bruce Ferris told you that the most dangerous time for a domestic violence victim is when the abuser recognizes that she's leaving. So how does Doug respond? With threats and intimidation. He would not leave. Ashley tried to de-escalate. She could see how he was starting to build. She wanted to avoid a confrontation. Gee, you know, Doug, we've pretty much got everything done. Why don't we quit for the night and we can continue tomorrow? He ignored her. Instead, his hostility starts increasing. Two body checks where he bumps her shoulder past her in the hall. And it's not a bump that's an accident. It's a bump to intimidate her. She told you she almost lost her balance. Then we have the cardboard box incident where he slams that into her. Once again, she tries to de-escalate it. She even apologizes to him. And I asked her, why in the world would you apologize when he was the one who hit you with the box? Well, shortly after that, Ashley's had enough. What does she do? She tries to leave. She tries to flee the house. He catches up to her, grabs her by the hand, whirls her around. His back is now at the front door, and he's got her blocked. Somehow, Ashley finds the inner strength to yell, I'm done. You need to leave now. I'm done. You need to leave now. Please check your notes. That's going to be real important. Why? Because that revoked Doug's permission to be in Ashley's home on that afternoon. And here's what the instruction is going to tell you about that. It's in your packet. It's going to say the law and justifiable use of deadly force is as follows. If Ashley Benefield was in a dwelling in which she had a right to be, I think we can all agree this was her home. Doug did not live there. He was there by her permission on that day to help pack things. She had no duty to retreat and had the right to stand her ground and use force, including deadly force, if she reasonably believed such conduct was necessary to prevent A, imminent death or great bodily harm to herself, or B, the imminent commission of burglary, false imprisonment, or aggravated assault against herself. The elements of the forcible felony of burglary are 1. Douglas Benefield had permission or consent to enter the dwelling or structure owned by or in possession of Ashley Benefield. 2. Douglas Benefield, after entering the structure, remained inside after permission A. After permission to remain had been withdrawn and with the intent to commit an offense other than burglary or trespass inside the structure. The offense was false imprisonment. Ashley tried to leave her home. Doug stopped her, spun her around, and held her trapped inside the house. Or B, attempt to commit a felony, a forcible felony. Forcible felony is aggravated assault. Through threats and intimidation, Doug committed the offense of aggravated assault. It's in your packet. Read it. The important point is that once Ashley says, I am done, you need to leave now, he becomes, in essence, a burglar by remaining in that house after she tells him to leave. Not my words, not my law, the law that Judge White has given you. The last witness that we saw was Amy Carlton. And you might wonder how Ms. Carlton fit into all of this. Well, actually, she played a very significant role. We called Amy Carlton to show that this was anything other than a staged event. If you accept Ms. O'Donnell's interpretation of this, it was a staged event. It was a setup. Ms. Carlton told you that she was out walking her dog with her husband, they heard a series of shots, and less than 30 seconds later, Ashley emerged from the house, hysterical, screaming, holding the gun, and ran right next door. If you're going to stage an event like this after the shooting, you're going to certainly check the scene to make sure it's going to support your version of the event. Because if it doesn't, you're on your way to prison. It's going to take you longer than less than 30 seconds to do that. The state has failed to prove anything here beyond a reasonable doubt. We prove self-defense beyond all doubt, but the burden is not ours, it's theirs. And they must prove it beyond and to the exclusion of every reasonable doubt, which, ladies and gentlemen, they just have not done. So, for the last several years, I've walked hand in hand with Ashley.
Objection.
I'm now going to surrender her fate to you. I've presented to you everything that I possibly could to show you the dynamics of what took place on that day and why they took place and what Ashley knew about Doug at the time they took place to show you that her action in using deadly force was reasonable. The judge is going to tell you in your instructions you can take into account what she knew about domestic history with Doug, the size differential between Doug and Ashley. Ladies and gentlemen, and Ashley Benefield is not guilty of murder in the second degree. She's also not guilty of manslaughter. When you read the manslaughter instruction, it tells you that it is not manslaughter if the shooting was justifiable, if it was in self-defense. The manslaughter instruction tells you that as well. You all promised in voir dire that you would stick to your guns and not be intimidated by the majority or the other jurors. Manslaughter is a compromise. Ashley's not looking for a compromise. She's entitled to more than that. This is either second degree murder or it's not. If you follow the oath that you took and you read the instructions, we're confident you will return a verdict of not guilty in this case. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Rebuttal?
AB had enough. The defense just said that.
AB had enough. She did have enough. On September 27th, 2020, she had enough. She took out a .45 caliber gun and shot Mr. Benefield four times. At Mr. Benefield four times. And why did she do that? Why had she had enough? I will do anything I have to do to keep my baby. Asshole. To a detective. A detective that she demanded arrest somebody in a courthouse because that will help her keep her baby. It is not surprising at all that Detective Dillon remembered that. That is an outrage to say to a law enforcement officer. You will arrest him or I will make him. That's what she told a law enforcement officer. You think she'll tell a law enforcement officer that and she won't shoot Doug Benefield when she's had enough?
No.
She would and she did.
Time is running out. Within a week of murdering Mr. Benefield, time is running out. She said that I will take matters into my own hands. She said that to a psychologist who was doing reports for the state, for the court. I will take matters into my own hands. She did with a 45. And let's talk about what we've heard. And it's my job to rebut the defense's argument. That's what I'm here for. And I think we can. And I do ask you to depend on your memory. But I want to set some groundwork. Number one, Ms. O'Donnell and I are clearly part of an old boy network. No, this is not an old boy network. This is law. This is the law. And if those law enforcement officers did not find that they had the sufficient basis to arrest Mr. Benefield, then they wouldn't have. And that's why they did it. That is not an old boy network. That is how our country works. That is what the law is for. Otherwise, any woman could walk into any police station and say, my husband did XYZ, and they're just going to arrest him? No, it requires evidence. It's the same reason that law enforcement took a long time between this murder and her arrest. They were investigating it. They were making sure they had everything they needed to have. And when they did, they effectuated an arrest. And the prosecution, you heard a lot. You heard Ms. O'Donnell's name more than Ashley Benefield's name during that closing. It's not about Ms. O'Donnell. It's not about Ms. Friel. It's not about either of us. It's the state of Florida, and we have the burden. And we've overcome it. It's not a flawed prosecution. Our job is to prove to you beyond a reasonable doubt that the elements in this case occurred, that manslaughter occurred, which it did. Manslaughter is an intentional act that caused a death. She intentionally shot him, and he died. That's a manslaughter, no doubt about it. But that's not enough. She did it because she has ill will, hatred, spite, or evil intent. She had a depraved heart when she shot and killed Mr. Benefield so she could keep her baby. And does it matter if the report was coming out or if that injunction hearing was happening? No. Clearly, Miss Murphy and her client, who was murdered just a few days later, thought that Mr. Broder's report was coming out. Clearly, Faith Brown and Ashley Benefield thought or knew that they were having an injunction hearing on that day. The jig is up. She has wanted this man out of her life. She has wanted her baby to herself. And what is she doing? She's so scared of him, she has him doing her manual labor. You can come over. You can move my stuff. You can get the heavy stuff. You know what? Can you stop and buy me boxes? Can you stop and buy me tape? Do you want to go to the gardens? She told you that she couldn't dress a certain way. She was in a sports bra and shorts when he showed up. You didn't hear that he said a word. You didn't hear that he had insulted her in any way. She would have you believe all these things about Mr. Benefield. And mind you, Mr. Benefield is not on trial. Ashley Benefield's on trial. Ashley Benefield's the one that committed a criminal act on 9/27/2020 when she murdered him. Don't be confused or distracted by emails and questions that showed you nothing. The question is, were the facts, did you learn whether or not she shot him and at the time she had a depraved heart? And there was no dishonesty by Stephanie Murphy. Don't be confused by that. I think they just had a different understanding of what was going to happen. There's certainly no dishonesty by Detective Gillum. Not remembering something, or Detective Warren, and being dishonest are two wholly different things. And nobody's expected to remember everything. The question for you, as Ms. O'Donnell said, is whether or not it was reasonable and necessary for her to kill him, for her to shoot him that day when he's in a shorts and a t-shirt and flip-flops doing her work for her. And keep in mind, this ninja we've heard of, 5'9", 169, adult small t-shirt, size 30 waist. We know what that means. This is not a huge man. This is not a hulking beast of a man. And the state is not contending that he didn't make mistakes. He certainly did. One of the biggest being trying to maintain this relationship that ended in his death. But was it reasonable? Never hit her. She said he never hit her. He did some outrageous things, but never hit her in any way, shape, or form. In 3 years, they'd been apart. 3 years. Reasonable. Is it reasonable? She would have you believe that, and look at those text messages. Look at the text messages going into that week, that whole week. And look at, I would ask you to read the state's version, because that is the complete conversation. Oh, I'm sorry. Those are the older texts. When you look at the older text messages, this murderous intent, he's talking about her old boyfriends. She admitted that. And them choking her during sex. He's not talking about wanting to go out in the world and murder people. He's certainly not talking about her. It may not be what the average person thinks of a way to express your love, but apparently to Doug Benefield and to her, it was. Because she's like, I know, baby. Don't talk like that. She never checks him, right? She never says, oh, don't. She says, I think she says, it was just a fight. These men that were just talking, she says it's a fight. So don't be confused. Look at the evidence. But in the text messages leading up to that week, look at them. You have them. They're the ones Ms. O'Donnell did that had the video of them playing a game at Panera where they're all yucking it up. I would dispute that she was afraid. I would dispute most of what Mr. Ferris said, but we'll come back to that. So she would have you believe that this man who has never struck her, who in 3 years she reports no abuse, 3 years, he's done nothing. She left him while pregnant, did not tell him that she birthed his baby, did not give that baby his name, and then filed before he ever meets his child to terminate his parental rights. And no allegations that he insulted her, came to her house and hit her, did any of those things. Shot any guns, had any guns, none of that, right? So she did all those horrible things. If you want your baby, those are horrible. The Doug Benefield. She did all those things, and nothing happens. But this day, when she has been dictating for a week when he could come over, when he could help her, what they would do, she would have you believe that he got so enraged because she was done moving and she was tired that he hit her for the first time ever. And you get to decide if you believe her or not. I would submit to you that did not happen. There's no evidence of it, and you know it. You can see by those pictures. I don't care what Barbara Russell, who's clearly biased, right? Barbara Russell is a clearly biased witness. That's her. They have some kind of relationship that is clearly not professional, and she sat there and told you that she saw swelling. Keeping in mind, she saw her the night of. This is her. This is somebody who she had a professional relationship with and then moved in. The night of, that's who comes to her, this woman. She tells you that she has edema on her face. I don't know what edema is. I assume it's swelling and bruising. It's not there. You can see in those pictures. You're going to look at them. You can look at them until cows come home, you won't see swelling. All those law enforcement officers who are trained to look for that, crime scene techs who went there for the sole purpose of finding injuries and had some lawyer pointing out that her ear was red. Look at that picture. There's no redness. No redness. So he becomes so enraged that he hits her for the first time. She doesn't go down. She didn't say, I fell. This man is a trained fighter who's a ninja, and he hits her and she doesn't go down. And she can't tell you if it was a slap or a punch. There's a big difference. There's a big difference. And if he punched her in the eye, eye, her eye would look way different than it does. There's no swelling on the side from a punch. She'd have a black eye, not a bruise, not a swell, nothing. So let's say it was a slap. Let's believe her. It was a slap. There's no redness, no swelling, no bruising, no scratching, no evidence in the photo. I mean, if somebody slaps somebody in the face, there's a red mark. Nothing. Within minutes. Stop. And even if you don't believe law enforcement, which I submit there's no reason to not believe them, Mr. Sam, that sweet old man who she brought this drama into his home, said, I didn't see any injuries. Wouldn't he be the one in the best position to see if she had been slapped in the face moments before? Certainly. He didn't see it. Because it wasn't there. It's an attempt to manipulate the system, which is exactly what she continues to do. And keep in mind, he's flipped out to the point of hitting her for the first time because she's tired and doesn't want to move anymore. That's what she told you. She didn't say she had tried to break up with him. She didn't say she had told him she didn't want to see him again. She didn't say any of those things. She told you she told him she didn't want to live together when they were alone together. And it was fine. It was fine. So he gets so enraged and pops off and hits her or punches her in the face when she's tired. But not when she says she doesn't want to be with him. Is that reasonable? It is not. And trying to think of a way to say this nicely, but I would submit to you that everything that Dr. Quintal said about Doug Benefield was basically Dr. Quintal talking with Ashley Benefield's voice. She's a manipulator. She manipulated him the same way she tried to manipulate everyone in the world. He said he met with them 9 times, and Ashley Benefield was present for 7 of them, and alone for 5 of them. So every bit of information he got, except for 2 sessions, comes through the voice of Ashley Benefield, the way she wants him to think things are. Right? He's very controlling. He's very alpha male, which is apparently a bad thing now. He's super controlling. He's jealous. Keeping in mind, she's the one that asked Doug Benefield, are you dating her now? When he's there with her lawyer. But Doug Benefield's the one that's super jealous. And what did he tell you? Other than he thought all those things he conceded that they were all based on what Ashley told him, not based on anything he observed. He conceded that, which I appreciate. But the weird thing was that he had this weird encounter where he thought that Doug didn't want to see the child. And what did he say? I saw him for a few minutes in my waiting room. I went into a session for an hour, and then I saw him for a few more minutes, and then we started their session. So what happened in that hour? Dr. Quintal doesn't know. For him to make any assumptions on what the relationship was between Doug Benefield and his child based on seeing him for those few minutes is not reasonable. There was no basis for that. And keep in mind, through all of that, that she's dictating when Doug can see that baby. We don't know if he knew she was out there. He's sitting in the lobby of a psychologist or a therapist's office. We don't know that he knew she was out here. There's so many assumptions that Dr. Quintal jumped to in order to say those things, and they're just not reasonable. Despite a court order, she's dictating when Doug sees that baby and how, and then you're supposed to believe that it was something weird about Doug that he didn't go out to the parking lot. He could have been in the parking lot for an hour for all Dr. Quintal knows. And you know, the one thing he did say that was interesting was Ashley said she was frustrated with the system, which sounds familiar. Time is running out. I'll take things into my own hands. I'll do anything I have to do. She's frustrated because she's trying and trying and trying to do these things based on things that are not happening or not true, and it's not going her way. She tried to terminate his parental rights. Judge said, he can see that baby. That 6-month-old that he's never seen. So what did she do? Well, I don't really want him to do that, so I'm going to dictate how he sees the baby. I'm going to be sweet again. Now I'm going to go back. I think the only person that was in a cycle was Ashley Benefield. I'm not going to talk to you for months, but once somebody says you can have my baby, now I'm your best friend again. That's not Doug Benefield. He acted the same way in those text messages as she told you he did for 3 years. No violence, no threats, no manipulation, no emotional abuse. And that brings me to Dr. Ferris. Mr. Ferris. Mr. Ferris has never seen a relationship he wouldn't say is a domestic violence relationship. He would not concede anything. On direct, Mr. Taylor was giving him hypotheticals that had 6 or 8 aspects to them. And he was able to just answer. Oh yeah, sure, that's domestic. Goes right on the wheel. I'm asking him simple questions and he would not concede. The only one he conceded about was that if she was living on her own, he couldn't have been economically controlling her. But how do you not get that one, right? That's common sense. Every other thing he refused to concede. And this is one thing I will agree with Mr. Taylor. We have different perceptions because I think Dr. Ferris was clearly biased based on his inability to answer my questions when he clearly could answer the defense questions. It's clear from what was happening in this relationship that Ashley Benefield was not a victim of domestic violence. Doug Benefield's the victim in this case, not Ashley Benefield. And that there was not this power and control wheel that Doug Benefield was on. And keep in mind, Mr. Ferris would have you believe that somebody could be violent and then never never be not violent again. That's what he said. I said, are you telling me that once there's violence in someone, it can never be changed? Well, if that's true, why does he teach CBIP? He makes his money on CBIP, right? Certified Battered Intervention Program. If what he told me was true, he's wasting people's time because he doesn't believe anybody can get better. And we all know that's not true. People change. People learn. People realize what they've done. People apologize for what they've done. And while saying the words is not enough, 3 years of not being in any way violent or threatening or abusive, that's an indication that Mr. Benefield was trying to change. He was trying to do anything he could to be with his wife and to be with his baby. And Mr. Taylor kept saying, the defense kept saying trauma. She was so traumatized by this gunshot in the ceiling. So she had a baby with him? She testified to you that that happened before they reversed, or around the same time they reversed his vasectomy. That's a big deal. That's a decision. That's not it. I think Mr. Taylor said, you found yourself pregnant. She didn't find herself pregnant. She planned to have a baby. They planned it together. They went through medical procedures to do it, and they did it. All the while, she's so traumatized. I would submit to you, that is not the case. She wanted a baby, and she got one. But Doug was in the way. And as to that neighbor thing, it wasn't Mr. Sam. I don't know where that came from. There was no allegation it was ever Mr. Sam. It was some neighbor across the street. And Ms. O'Donnell told you exactly what was in evidence. Somebody across the street saw some man in her backyard wearing a baseball cap. And clearly that must be Doug Benefield looking in Ashley Benefield's windows. That's ridiculous. That's a jump you cannot make. That man could have been looking for his dog. We have no idea. There's certainly no evidence he was looking at anybody's windows other than the defense counsel saying that. And even if he was, does not make it reasonable and necessary to shoot him. Is not a basis that would cause you to believe he's going to kill you. Going to kill you. Not a basis. I would submit to you he never was in that yard. He was never looking in the windows. But even if he was, a tracker, not a basis to believe he's going to kill you, if that even happened. The house, buying the house, I read that very differently. First of all, he wasn't trying to buy, he was trying to rent. And if you don't believe that they were talking while they had this mutual injunction, they were, I'm sure. Miss Benefield was lying to him, telling him they're going to move to Maryland and live in separate houses, but you know, co-parent. And she was all the while planning with her attorney to have an injunction hearing in a matter of days. It's reasonable to believe that that mutual injunction was, I'm sure, Ms. Benefield was speaking to him when it was convenient for her. When she could get something out of it. It only goes with the rest of it. This letter we've heard about that Ms. Benefield testified all these things, it's another effort at manipulation. We don't know when she wrote that letter. We don't know what she put in it. We don't know if any of it was true. I can write a letter and tell you that I'm the Queen of England. It doesn't make it true. And just because I say I wrote it 3 years ago doesn't mean I did. I keep saying manipulation, and the reason is because this defendant attempted to manipulate the system. It didn't work. She attempted to manipulate the experts. She kind of did, right? Because what did we hear about Dr. Liu and Mr. Haig? They talked to the defendant. She told him what she says happened, right? I don't even think she told him the same story she told you based on what they said. But what do we know? So Mr. Haig, I will submit to you, I think Mr. Haig was great.
I loved it. I thought he was very interesting. I thought he shed a lot of light on how this murder occurred, right? And I would submit to you that you should believe him over Dr. Liu when it comes to trajectory. He's an expert, no doubt about it. That's what he does all the time. Dr. Liu is a medical examiner. She seems like a well-qualified medical examiner who did testify mostly for the state because she worked for the state and is now testifying for the defense. And the defense asks you, why would she do that? She did that because she's getting paid. She's getting paid to be here. That's why she's here. That's why she's saying those things. And most of them were probably very accurate. So Mr. Haig tells you there's 4 shots. We know that, right? We had 4 casings. We have 4 projectiles. One is in Mr. Benefield's chest or back. And I think there was some misunderstanding of what Ms. O'Donnell was trying to show you. What she's trying to show you is that if it was from the front, because say I'm lunging, it would go in my chest and out the back. That's not what happened. It went front to back because it hit in here and came out here. Well, that's front to back. That's not front to back like it goes in my chest and comes out my back. That's front to back because it didn't end up here, right? Or she didn't shoot him in the back, it ended up on the other side of his back. It goes across his body, destroying his lung, destroying his spinal cord, damaging his ribs. And what did Dr. Liu say? He dropped. I think that's important. So Mr. Haig said there's 1 bullet, right? We got 4. 1 is in his chest, so we know where that one is. 1's in the living room wall that Mr. Haig said he believed was going down and struck the tile and then bounced up and hit the wall. He knows better than me. Seems reasonable. 3 is in the wall, number 7. Perfectly round, typical gunshot. nothing in its path, because what did he say? If something was in its path, it would get into tumble. It wouldn't be that perfect hole that we picture as a gunshot in a wall or a target or anything else. And then through his leg. So which bullet hit his arm? And I think Dr. Liu might have been correct when she had that young man laying on the floor. It probably went through his leg when he was on the floor, because what if, I mean, Ashley Benfield told you something. She said she's shooting down. We know that's not true, right? Because his chest is way up here. His chest isn't down here. But she told you that once I had stopped shooting when he fell. That's also, I think, untrue. Dr. Liu told you he would have dropped. So he's paralyzed, laying on the ground. She continues to shoot at him. Otherwise, if you believe that she's moving from left to right to get away from him, he's dancing around dodging bullets. I mean, they'd have you believe this is a very tight room. I don't know how tight it is, but you can see there's either a full or a queen size mattress in that room. And there's plenty of other room. This is not a broom closet. This is a full size bedroom. And what else do we know? Dr. Vega said that they had been at least 3 feet apart. 3 feet apart. Uncontroverted. Nobody said anything different. Except for our firearms guy, who talked very fast, but said he looked chemically at the shirt and found nothing. 6 to 7 feet. 6 to 7 feet. Even if we go 3 feet, you have to keep in mind that's from the end of the gun. She is pointing a gun at him. Here to Mr. Benfield is at least 3 feet, if not 6 to 7, when she hits him in the chest. At least 3 feet when she hits him on the leg, because Dr. Vega said there was no stippling on the leg. They're not in close combat. We keep hearing about this close, they are not in close combat. They're a whole grown-sized man apart, 6 feet, from the end of her gun to his body.
And we know that, that's from the science. That was uncontroverted. You heard nothing to question that. You can take that one to the bank. And I would submit to you that those two experts, Mr. Haig was the one you should be depending on, even though he also spoke to Ms. Benfield, so clearly got one side of story, or a made-up story, and that Dr. Liu is not the expert that Mr. Haig is on trajectory. So if you go in the back and you're curious about the trajectory, I would say you should depend on Dr. Vega's testimony about how the bullets entered the body and exited, which Dr. Liu did not contest. And as for the other bullets, you should depend on Mr. Haig, because he was clearly more suited to answer those questions. As to Detective Warren, poor Detective Warren, who gets called just to be impeached, said he had opinions. You know whose opinions don't matter in this case? Detective Warren's. Mine don't matter. Ms. O'Donnell's don't matter. Defense state attorneys don't matter. It's your opinions that matter. It's when you go in the back, you listen to the facts and evidence in this case, and you decide if we've proven our case. If Detective Warren, at the time in which he made his decisions, thought that he was shot in the back, that's not wholly unreasonable. He may have been mistaken. It doesn't make his opinion invalid, but what it does, it's not relevant to your decision making, because you're depending on the facts and you have the accurate facts. Thank you, Judge. I appreciate that. And that whole bias business, Detective Warren explained what that is. That's sexual bias or racial bias. This wasn't a hate crime. This wasn't a crime because somebody hates somebody else because of their sexual orientation. That's not what this is. That's not a place to put ill will, hatred, spite, or evil intent. Ill will, hate, spite, or evil intent is not bias. It's an element of second degree murder. It's a depraved heart. And that's what Ashley Benfield had when she murdered Doug Benfield. A few more things, and then I want to talk to you lastly about the reasonable doubt. As to Dr. Broder, I think you should take some of what Dr. Broder said to heart. Her concern, was not that Doug was going to fly off at the handle. She said she was concerned she would make him look bad in front of Dr. Broder. I pretended that I'm moving to Maryland and going to co-parent because I don't want to make him look bad. This man that I would have you believe was a abusive, horrible man. They have defamed him up and down. No, she didn't say that. She didn't say, I was afraid that Doug would freak out on him. I was afraid he'd do this. No, she said, I didn't want to make him look bad. She's manipulating Dr. Broder, right? She's manipulating Doug, for sure. She can't say in front of Doug, I'm not moving to Maryland, because then who's going to move her boxes, right? I can't say in front of Doug, I'm not moving to Maryland with you, because then maybe he won't drop his divorce case. Then maybe he'll try to take my baby, right? She can't let him know that. She can't let him know that till he's packed her up, ready to go. It's manipulation, and that's what she does. That's what she's done. The evidence has shown it to you. And it doesn't matter if it was the report or the injunction. She knew the jig is up. He might seek more control. It probably just went in there, but Stephanie Murphy told you that when they went, she was trying to get an injunction, and it was denied. And he was trying to get custody, visitation, see his baby for the first time. She said something I thought was very telling. The judge gave Doug sole medical control or primary medical control over the baby, right? But now he's already got some control. She can't do anything without him on the medical stuff, right? Of course she's worried. Of course, because she wants that baby and she'll do whatever she can do to keep it her. And I wouldn't put anything in the fact that she didn't confess on her phone, that she didn't tell somebody that he, that she had shot him one way or the other. She didn't even tell her mama. They would have you, her mother would have you believe that in these, all these years, she's never said something to you. You think she's gonna put it on her phone? No, she's smarter than that. If that's true, she's certainly not gonna put it on her phone. And just because you search up how to co-parent with an abuser doesn't mean that person's an abuser. I would submit to you that Ashley Benefield is very smart. She's been working the system or trying for years. And if I say, oh, I'm trying to co-parent with an abuser, that looks good for me. He's an abuser. He shouldn't have my baby. He shouldn't have medical control. He certainly shouldn't have custody, partial custody, or anything else. Just because she said it doesn't mean it's true. And that's because, as I said, she tried to manipulate the system in South Carolina. It ended up being mutual. She tried to manipulate the system in Florida. Got turned down. She tried to terminate his parental rights. The judge gave him custody. She tried to manipulate the experts, as I already talked, and I think in some cases she did. And she's trying to manipulate you. You can decide what you think about her testimony. She's a witness like any other. But I would submit to you that that was all manipulation. There were no tears. You use your common sense. If you cry and have to take breaks and you're racking, then you're gonna have a swollen face. Your eyes are gonna be puffy. You're gonna have snot. I don't know what other word to use. She didn't even get a tissue until, I can't remember who, either the judge or the defense attorney told her, hey, there's tissues. Oh yeah, I should have a tissue. She'd been crying for 15 minutes. Didn't need a tissue. That's manipulation. That's her efforts to manipulate you and make you believe that she was a victim. She is not the victim. Douglas Benefield was the victim in this case. And reasonable doubt, I would ask you to read your instructions, because that board they put up was an incomplete instruction. It left out part. And the part is that proof beyond a reasonable doubt does not mean proof beyond all doubt. You don't have to get back there and have no doubt. You have to get back there and decide, did she shoot and kill him with a depraved heart? And I would submit to you she did. And then you have to decide, was she justified in using self-defense? Was it reasonable and necessary based on what happened in that house that she shoot and kill him on September 27th, 2020? It's not a mere possible doubt, a speculative, imaginary, or forced doubt. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a reasonable doubt. And the state would submit to you that we have proven beyond a reasonable doubt that Doug Benefield is dead. The death was caused by a criminal act of this defendant, Ashley Benefield, and there was an unlawful killing by an act imminently dangerous to another and demonstrating a depraved mind without regard for human life. And it was not justified. It was not based on self-defense. It was not reasonable and necessary to stand 6 to 7 feet away from that man and shoot at him four times. And I would ask that you come back and find this defendant guilty of murder in the second degree with a firearm. Thank you. Thank you, Judge.
All right, can you go back to your instructions? And if you remember, we left off at 3.10. And we're going to ask, when you find that, if you just look up at me and I'll know we're all on the same page. These are some general rules that apply to your discussions. You must follow these rules in order to return a lawful verdict. You must follow the law as it is set out in these instructions. If you fail to follow the law, your verdict will be a miscarriage of justice. There is no reason for failing to follow the law in this case. All of us are depending upon you to make a wise and legal decision in this matter. This case must be decided only upon the evidence that you have heard from the testimony of the witnesses and have seen in the form of the exhibits in evidence and these instructions. This case must not be decided for or against anyone because you feel sorry for anyone or are angry at anyone. Remember, the lawyers are not on trial. Your feelings about them should not influence your decision in this case at all. Your duty is to determine if the defendant has been proven guilty or not in accord with the law. It is the judge's job to determine a proper sentence if the defendant is found guilty. Whatever verdict you render must be unanimous. That is, each juror must agree to the same verdict. Your verdict should not be influenced by feelings of prejudice, bias, or sympathy. Your verdict must be based on the evidence and on the law contained in these instructions. Deciding a verdict is exclusively your job. I cannot participate in that decision in any way. Please disregard anything that I may have said or done that made you think that I preferred one verdict over another. You may find the defendant guilty as charged or guilty of such lesser included crime as the evidence may justify or not guilty. If you return a verdict of guilty, it should be for the highest offense on the verdict form that has been proven beyond a reasonable doubt. If you find that no offense has been proven beyond a reasonable doubt, then of course your verdict must be not guilty. The verdict must be unanimous, that is, all of you must agree to the same verdict. Only one verdict may be returned as to the crime charge. The verdict must be in writing, and for your convenience, the necessary verdict form has been prepared for you. And of course, I explained it earlier. In just a few moments, you will be taken to the jury room by the court deputy. The first thing you should do is choose a foreperson who will preside over your deliberations. The foreperson should see to it that your discussions are carried on in an organized way and that everyone has a fair chance to be heard. It is also the foreperson's job to sign and date the verdict form when all of you have agreed on a verdict and to bring the verdict form back to the courtroom when you return. During deliberations, jurors must communicate about the case only with one another and only when all jurors are present in the courtroom, in the jury room. If a juror goes to the restroom, the deliberations should stop until that juror returns. You are not to communicate with any person outside the jury about this case. Until you have reached a verdict, you must not talk about this case in person or through the telephone, writing, or electronic communication such as email or any other means. Do not contact anyone to assist you during deliberation. These communications rules must apply until I discharge you at the end of the case. If you become aware of any violation of these instructions or any other instruction I have given in this case, you must tell me by giving a note to the court deputy. Many of you have cell phones, tablets, laptops, and other electronic devices here in the courtroom. The rules do not allow you to bring your phones or any of those types of electronic devices into the jury room. Kindly leave those devices on your seats where they will be guarded by the court deputy while you deliberate. Let me break the script to say also, these jury instructions haven't been updated in a while, and if you have a watch, a smartwatch that can communicate with the internet or make calls or send and receive texts separate apart from your phone, that also needs to go in the Tupperware container that the deputy's holding up. All your electronic devices will be there, but you can't have anything in there that will communicate outside the jury room. If you need to communicate with me, send a note through the court deputy. If you have voted, do not disclose the actual vote in the note. If you have questions, I will talk with the attorneys before I answer. So it may take some time. You may continue your deliberations while you wait for my answer. I will answer any questions, if I can, in writing or orally here at open court. During the trial, items were received into evidence as exhibits. You may examine whatever exhibits you think will help you in your deliberations. These exhibits will be sent into the jury room with you when you begin to deliberate. I'm going to stop there also. When you go back, I think there was a few electronic items or things to view on a computer or on a DVD player. There's going to be what we call the tech cart that will be in the jury room with you. There's instructions on top of that about how to work the different devices and everything. If you have any problems at all, send a note through the court deputy and I'll make arrangements for our IT department to come down and get going whatever you need to get going. In closing, let me remind you that it is important that you follow the law spelled out in these instructions in deciding your verdict. There are no other laws that apply to this case. Even if you do not like the laws that must be applied, you must use them. For more than two centuries, we have lived by the Constitution and the law. No juror has the right to violate the rules we all share. Now, as you gather up your notes and your other items, as I said, you're able to take these jury instructions, your notes, back in the jury room. Before I let you do that, though, I do want to let you know, all of you know, that in almost every case, we select the jury as well as alternate jurors in case one of the main jurors is not able to fulfill their duties. Especially as we've come out of COVID, it is not uncommon. I'd say 20-30% of the cases, we have somebody get sick or something happens, and an alternate juror has to step in and serve on the main jury. Alternate jurors are incredibly important, as it does happen every so often that for various reasons, jurors are not able to complete their service and an alternate must be seated on the jury. In this case, jurors 38, 42, and 43 have served as alternate jurors. As such, I am not able to allow you to retire to deliberate with the rest of the jury. Do the three of you have personal effects in the jury room?
You have stuff in there. Here's how this is going to work. You're going to leave your notes here. I'm going to ask you to go back in the jury room with everybody. The deputy is going to take you back. I need you to gather up all your personal effects and then come back out here to the jury, to the courtroom, so I can give you your final instructions before we let you go. But I'll need you to come back out. The other remaining six of you, when you go back, let those three jurors or alternate jurors get their things. You may not begin your deliberations until the deputy steps out, has received your electronic devices, has stepped out, and that door has closed. Then you may begin your deliberations.
All right, we have the exhibits. We've got the exhibits. Deputy, can I give you the verdict form? All right, so all of you may step out at this point, and then I'll need the three alternates to come right back out, please. For the other six, you may now retire to consider your verdict. All right, you all can sit down. State defense, any objection to how the jury was charged other than the objections during the charge conferences?
None from the defense.
None.
All right, thank you. Yes, we have the names. Welcome back. Can you just grab whatever seat you want? I won't keep you much longer. We've got, Deputy, we have all the notes and...
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you. I want to just take a minute and thank you for your service. I was here for jury selection, and I know that some of you missed very important work engagements that you expressed meant a lot. Some of you missed doctor's appointments, and all of you missed personal time at work, with your friends, with your family, in sacrifice of your civic duty as serving as jurors. Contrary to what a lot of people think, I find this to be possibly the most stressful part of my job, because I now sit and look at all three of you who have given us a week and a half of your time so willingly and so graciously, and to say, I'm sorry, I can't let you deliberate. Now, sometimes I do this, and you see the smiles come on people's faces, because they're glad they don't have to be part of the deliberations, and I have received some angry calls afterwards about being an alternate and the person wanted to go back and deliberate. However you feel, relieved or upset, I just want to say thank you for doing your civic duty, for answering the call, for being here, and just being so generous with your time. I've watched the entire jury the last 7 or 8 work days, and you have been incredibly attentive, paying attention. There's been a lot of people in and out of this courtroom. You have not been distracted one bit. You are exactly what we want in our jurors. And I thank you on behalf of myself, the other judges of the 12th Circuit, thank you so much for giving us your time. I am now. Oh, I have some certificates of appreciation that I'm going to give you to commemorate serving as a juror. Also attached to each of those is the paper for work, if you need it to show where you've been
for that. If for some reason that paper is not sufficient for your needs, please reach out to my judicial assistant. My card had her direct number, and if they need a letter from me or whatever they need, we'll get it to them to show that you've been here this entire time serving as a juror. I am now going to read you your final jury instruction. I wish to thank you for your time and consideration of this case. I also wish to advise you of some very special privileges enjoyed by jurors. The law gives you a unique privilege not to speak with anyone about the jury's work. Although you are at liberty to speak with anyone about your jury service, you are also at liberty to refuse to speak with anyone. It will be up to you to decide whether to preserve your privacy as a juror or not. With that said, again, I offer my heartfelt thanks on behalf of myself and the other judges of the 12th Circuit, all of the court administration, and for all the citizens of the 12th Circuit for being part of this process. I now discharge you as jurors in this case and release you from any further obligations in this matter. If any of you would like to be escorted to your vehicles, all you have to do is let this deputy know and he will make sure that you are walked all the way to your vehicle and until you leave. Thank you again very much.
Thank you, Judge.
All right, you all can have a seat.
Your Honor, if I may, what's the 12th Circuit's position about approaching all the jurors to see if they will speak?
I'm not aware of an official position on our website.
All right, just want to make sure. Does the court have any?
Oh, you mean like interviewing them or just walking up to them?
Just approaching them and asking if they would be willing to speak.
I would appreciate having a hearing on that.
Okay.
All right, anything else before we go?
We've got the JOA.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so on behalf of Ms. Benfield, we renew all previously made motions and objections, specifically our JOA, and now for the final. I would state that the state has failed to meet its burden of disproving self-defense beyond a reasonable doubt, and that the uncontroverted evidence clearly demonstrates that Ms. Benfield acted and justifiable self-defense. More specifically, she testified that Mr. Benfield physically intimidated her, prevented her from leaving the residence, struck her on the head, pursued her to her bedroom, and advanced on her in a threatening manner despite her warnings to stop. She reasonably believed her life was in imminent danger of death or great bodily harm. The state has presented no evidence to rebut Ms. Benefield's account of events. As stated in Hernandez-Ramos versus State at 496 Southern 2nd 837, Florida 2nd DCA 1986, quote, the state has the burden of proving guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, which includes proving beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant did not act in self-defense. The state's evidence was legally insufficient to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt because the state failed to rebut the defendant's direct testimony that he acted in self-defense, and in fact, some of the state's evidence corroborated defendant's testimony of self-defense. Thank you.
State.
Judge, I would just say that the state has met its burden that a reasonable jury could find beyond a reasonable doubt that this charge has been proven. I would ask you to deny
JOA. Any rebuttal?
No, sir.
All right, I'm going to reserve at this point. All right, if there's no other business, then we are going to be in recess until we have a question or a verdict. I would ask if you could please leave a cell number with the clerk so she has, so we can get a hold of you. Please don't be more than 10 minutes away so you can get back here pretty quick if we have any questions or issues.
What time do you think you'll let them go to the judge?
Go for the evening?
Yeah.
I tend to let them go until they ask to leave. The issue that's in the back of my mind right now is to see if they ask for dinner. What do we have a cutoff for that?
No.
To order?
Not getting a little
like 6?
7 p.m.
7?
So, I mean, you know, usually if they're hungry, we'll hear from them between 5 and 6. That's my experience. But if we don't hear from them, maybe by 5:30, I might have the deputies just kind of knock and say, you guys okay? You want a menu? And just, that'll be it.
Okay.
That way I don't have to call you all back to deal with that.
Thank you.
The other thing I will not call you back for is if they ask for IT help. I don't reconvene for that.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, welcome back. We're back on the record in State versus Benefield, 2020 CF 3014, and you've been called back because there's a jury question. And I'm going to read the question, and if either side wants to approach and look at it yourselves, you sure can. I'm going to read it as it is. Dr. Quintella testimony. Defense recall. Was his description with Doug based on his observation or what Ashley told him, i.e. domineering, super controlling, alpha male, over the top, not genuine? All right, anybody want to be heard first?
Any particular order?
No, sir.
I understand the question. What's the court's inquiry?
I know in my mind how I think I'm going to respond, okay. But I'm always going to give the parties an opportunity to be heard on
that. Sure. I think they should have Dr. Quintel's testimony read back to them, specifically because I asked Dr. Quintel if he reached any conclusions as a result of meeting and evaluating Douglas Benefield. And those were the conclusions that Dr. Quintel said he reached. It had nothing to do with my asking him if it was based upon anything Ashley Benefield told him. And I think unless that message is sent, unless that's clear to them, then I think it's a terrible prejudice to the defense.
I'm sorry, what's a prejudice to the defense?
What's the question?
No, what was the prejudice to the defense? If what happened?
Prejudice to the defense is that they're being misled.
If we do what?
If we do not read back their testimony, his testimony. That way it doesn't have to be the lawyer's comments, it's the testimony of the witness, it's objective.
Judge, I think there are a couple options. One is the standard, use your memory. I don't know if the court can offer to have something read back when they don't ask for it, but if it is read back, it needs to be the direct and the cross.
All right, any final thoughts? Well, they clearly are not asking for a read back. They're asking a factual question. And I would direct both sides to standard jury instructions 4.3 and 4.4. 4.3 addresses answers to juror inquiries during deliberations. 4.4 is request for readback or playback or transcript of testimony. We've all done this long enough. This is not a request for a readback. If they want a readback, they say we want a readback. They ask for testimony. It happens all the time. So at this point, the appropriate response is going to come from 4.3.
My concern, Your Honor, is that we're just assuming they know that they can ask for a readback. And I don't know that that's a fair assumption.
In your 400 trials, when have you ever given an instruction? When has a judge ever given an instruction? Hey, by the way, you could ask for a readback.
No.
No, I haven't either.
No, but I don't know if they know that. And the question may be inarticulate, that maybe you could ask for a clarification of the question.
Your Honor, Judge, we don't object to 4.3. We ask that you.
I'm sorry?
We agree 4.3 is the right.
Yeah, that's the correct response.
Yeah, if you needed us to agree, we do.
Okay. No, it's not even a debate. That's the correct response, is 4.3.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to read you what I plan on telling them, and then you can comment on it how you want. This comes directly from 4.3. Members of the jury, I have discussed your note with the attorneys. You have asked the following question, and then I'll read it. If I have not read your note correctly, please clarify your question in a follow-up note to the court. I am not able to answer this request because it asked the court to resolve a factual question that is within the province of the jury. Your decision must be based only on the evidence presented in the trial and the law that I have given you. If you have any other specific questions, please send another note and I will see if I can answer it.
No objection.
Object.
Object for the same reasons that you want me to affirmatively offer a read back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just so we're clear, I think that what created that question was a plethora of misrepresentations that the state delivered to them in their closing argument, and that's the reason why they've asked that question.
Thank you. You know what? Tell me his name. It's not Quintella.
Quintel.
No,
Quintel.
Q-U-I-N-T-A-L.
Like William Tell Quintel.
Okay, thank you. Because like a quinella is a bet at the track, isn't it?
Exactly.
I think that's what they're... It's like me trying to call the other witness the wrong name the whole time.
Keyless.
All right, Madam Clerk, I'm going to have to send this to you because I don't have a printer. Yeah, I'm sure it'll pop up. All right, ready to bring the jury in? Okay.
Yes, Judge.
Yes. Do you guys want me to broach the subject of food as well?
Yeah.
Up to you, Judge.
Okay. And y'all can have a seat wherever you want. You don't have to sit anywhere in particular. All right, y'all can have a seat. Welcome back. Members of the jury, I have discussed your note with the attorneys. You have asked the following question. 729-24, Dr. Quintella testimony, defense recall. Was his description with Doug based on his observation or what Ashley told him, i.e. domineering, super controlling, alpha male, over the top, not genuine, signed one of the jurors. If I have not read your note correctly, please clarify your question in a follow-up note to the court. I am not able to answer this request because it asked the court to resolve a factual question that is within the province of the jury. Your decision must be based only on the evidence presented in the trial and the law that I have given you. If you have any other specific questions, please send another note and I will see if I can answer it. Also, I don't want to know what's been discussed. However, it's getting to be almost 6 o'clock. If you want us to order food, it is not, it's not steak and lobster. But we can order some pizzas and get some sodas and have them and brought to the room. If you want that to happen, also send a note to the desk. All right, may retire to continue your deliberations. All right, we're gonna have a seat. The jury is out.
Are we on break? I missed the last.
Oh, yeah.
More continuing coverage is on the way.
The Black Swan murder trial of Ashley Benefield from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Press subscribe now.